Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're here with harmonica superpower singer songwriter, great artist and musician Marcus Milius. Say hello, Marcus.
Hello.
That's analog sound effects. Now, a lot of people don't know Marcus. You and I go way back. You're one of the first people I met at music school at USC. And I know you know this story, but you are responsible for something I've never forgotten in my life, but you are responsible for giving me my first paid gig in music, where I just sat in on one of your gigs at a coffee shop on Sunset Boulevard, and we all got tipped a dollar, and you gave me my first dollar that I ever made in music. And it was one of the coolest things and one of the best gestures anybody's ever done that I've known. So I love you as a brother, and I'm super excited to interview you, man.
Thanks. Yeah, I like how you left out the fact that the guitar player was like, why are we gonna give him a dollar? We're the band. And I said, come on, man.
You know what? I remember that was that you and I were talking about this very story not too long ago. And yeah, that was like a super awkward moment because you guys have been playing for like an hour or plus, or played a couple sets, and I sat in for one song, and like, I just remember you standing up for me, and you're like, we won't say his name, but you were like, dude, it's a dollar, you know, he made music with us, it's cool. And I just remember I was like, I'm going to make sure that I have this guy's back for the rest of time. And yeah, Marcus, you are one of my favorite people on the planet, and I'm excited to interview you. Because I've known you forever, but I get to ask you really cool questions, like my first question, which is, tell me about that moment of zen that made you want to become a musician. What was the song or songs or the band? What was the moment that you knew you wanted to play music?
I think I really got the bug when a friend of mine in high school, in maybe like ninth grade, was listening to a song on his Walkman, and he played, then he let me listen, and it was The Weight by The Band. And I was like, I know that song. What is that? That's really cool. And I went home and I sang it, the hook, for my stepdad. And he's like, oh yeah, you've been listening to that song forever. I used to hang out with The Band. I was a photographer.
What?
In Warner Brothers, at Warner Brothers Studios, and I have all their albums. You've been hearing that song forever. And then I realized, oh, it's okay to like my parents' music.
And you, was harmonica the first instrument you picked up?
No, I started getting the bug and was just like in following all the other kids around school who played music. And my parents had a nylon string guitar, and I had actually taken piano lessons when I was 8, and it was horrible. I fought it so much, and I didn't even learn what the black notes were for. I still don't know.
I won't tell you. I'm going to keep it a big surprise for you. You didn't learn like hot cross buns or any of the classics?
Well, I did learn some of those classics, but it was so, that's the problem, is that piano lessons were, didn't relate to what I was listening to. So, you know, I didn't have a huge, you know, I did not grow up poor. Don't tell anyone that.
I won't.
This is just you and I talking. But I did not have, I had a pretty lousy allowance. Like my parents would pay me a quarter to wash the car.
Oh man, what is this? Pre-prohibition times, dude.
But I didn't know any better because they bought everything else for me. So it's like food and I lived up in a canyon where I didn't need to spend any money. So if I wanted something, I'd wait for Christmas and ask for it, and even though I'm Jewish.
You learned to buck the system early.
And so, you know, like I didn't have a lot of albums. And so whatever was, I didn't have any, I would like once a year get a tape cassette and it would be Back to the Future soundtrack. You know, whatever.
That's a classic. That's a classic.
And so, you know, I was into like David Lee Roth, California Girls, and I want to learn that. And my piano teacher was like, well, nah, you're not, you're learning hot cross buns. So, you know, the music that I learned out of the book had nothing to do with what I was interested in. And also I didn't really have much of a way to expand my interest. And so in the early 80s, you know, 50s music was very influential in 80s music, and was in the soundtracks of Peggy Sue Got Married, La Bamba,
yeah,
everything. And so when we finally got like hip to the fact that we could have a little radio on, my brother and my neighbors and I, we would listen to oldies radio. And so that was our way of exploring and finding new stuff. But then there was the pop stuff that was happening, and none of what I learned on piano had anything to do with that. So I was totally uninterested with the Hannon exercises. And I didn't learn a thing. So when I was in high school and I was about 15, my friends were all into Led Zeppelin and all this classic rock, as well as rock bands from the day. And when I found out that it was cool to check out my stepdad's music, he had a giant record collection from working at Warner Brothers, because they just, in the 70s, they had so much money that they'd say, hang out here, and if we need you, we'll give you a job. And you would he would hang out at Warner Brothers and get photography jobs. And he could take home whatever records he wants. So he had John Coltrane, Mingus.
Wow.
10 Years After, everything, Paul Butterfield, Muddy Waters, all this stuff. And so when and a lot of the band who he used to hang out with. So when I realized it's cool to check out his music, then I could really just experiment and try things out. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting cover of album cover. I'll listen to that. And so I think for me, being able to have the blessing of unlimited album and exploration, and a stepdad who would sit down and tell me the stories of when he first listened to some of those songs.
Amazing.
That really, I always think of that as where everything started, is my stepdad's record collection.
Well, you know, it's a real testament to you as a musician, too, that listening became the biggest part of your love for music. It wasn't like the glamour of it, or, you know, it wasn't the images or like even the lifestyle. It was actually listening to records, which is still one of my favorite things, you know, when it comes to music. I'm a little bummed you didn't say the recorder was a major influence on you as a harmonica player. But you know what? You can't win at everything.
You know, it's funny because in elementary school, I went to a public school, and it was a really good public school. It was one of the, like, it was practically a private school. It was so good. And it was in Westwood. It was called Warner Avenue. And they were like, it was a great elementary school, but they didn't have a music program.
Wow. I had
a recorder once. And then somebody came, you know, there was just no music. So I didn't really get any music education. I had 2 years of piano lessons, which I fought, but I had no music education. And then I picked up my parents' classical guitar, and there was a piano, and there was like a toy zither and a kalimba, and I would just make up songs on those instruments, and they were
horrible. How old were you when you started writing?
15.
Oh wow, that's pretty early in the game.
I started writing songs before I learned songs.
Wow, not many people can do that. So you would just you would write lyrics first and start singing a melody and then try to accompany yourself?
A lot of them were really stupid songs.
That's like, all right.
I would just alternate between the different strings of the guitar. Like one of my first songs was, and so it was just those three strings. And then I decided, oh, you know what? I'm going to do a song going up the guitar neck. And I didn't realize that on the guitar, you should probably skip notes. So I wrote songs in the chromatic scale. And it was like,
dude, that's jazz, man. I know a lot of people that would still compose like that.
I'm not kidding. Like, I would just make up songs on any instrument, and it was about organizing sound. And I think not having any clue of what was right or wrong in a way was kind of a blessing.
Well, the one thing that's super unique about you that I always love the most about you too is that instrument hanging around your neck, because, you know, there's a lot of people that play the harmonica, but you're actually a serious harmonica player on a different level, because you actually went to USC Thornton School of Music, you studied jazz, and you did it all on the harmonica. And in fact, there were no teachers at the school that could teach you. And they said, we want you to make up your own curriculum. And I just knew, like, from that moment, I'm like, this guy's a badass. You're like trailblazing. I mean, honestly, I don't know a lot of people that went to school for harmonica and learned the instrument to that degree. And, you know, like, you made your own curriculum. Tell me a little bit what that was like for you, because I know some parts of it, but now looking back, what was that process like for you to kind of put your own curriculum together?
Well, I think at the time, like looking back, I see that I have a lot of the same pitfalls regardless of the instrument. But at the time, it was I started teaching myself guitar. And then when I was 16, for my birthday, I got a harmonica and a harmonica book. And so I started teaching myself harmonica, and I learned a major scale and the Marine Band's hymn.
Mm. That was the first song that you learned?
Yeah, because it came with the harmonica.
Do you remember it now? Can you play it?
No. Something like that.
Yeah, that's totally it, man.
But my dad was a military buff, so he was like, yeah, good job. So it was junior year, I went to the ensemble director at my school, and he was a really wonderful guy who would, it was a private school at that point, and so there weren't that many students, but he would write arrangements of Red Hot Chili Peppers for the jazz band.
Awesome.
Whatever they wanted, you know. And so he let me audition for the ensemble. And so I played a marine band's hymn, and he's like, okay, do you know any scales? And I was like, yeah, that major scale thing. And I went, I didn't even play the scale right. And he was like, okay, let's get you lessons. And so I immediately went to a place in Santa Monica called McCabe's and studied with Dave Gage, who has now a big website for harmonicalessons.com. And he started teaching me some stuff right away. And it, you know, I don't think I was, again, it was the same kind of thing. Like, I wasn't into what he was teaching. And, you know, I wanted to know how to play Pearl Jam or No Doubt, you know. And but the ensemble director would write pieces for me. And so he, wow, he did like a Jimmy Reed piece and gave me an easy part. And then Work Song, Cannonball Adderley's Work Song, because wow, Paul Butterfield had recorded that. And they were all pretty easy to learn on the harmonica right away. And so he would write arrangements around that, and he'd write out the sheet music. And then I'd take it to my teacher, and he's like, dude, don't bother. No harmonica player reads music. Don't. just learn it by ear. And I also didn't understand what was the difference between keys, and I didn't know why I needed more than one harmonica. And he was like, well, just, you're fine for now with one harmonica. Don't worry about it. And then what really changed it for me is I had these friends who had a rock band, and I had two harmonicas, C and A, and they said, oh, okay, well, we have a song in C, you can play to that. And so I thought, wow, if I get all the other harmonicas, that means I can play with all their songs. And that's not how it worked. But I went and got all our key harmonicas and was hoping that I'd get to play on every song now that I had all the keys.
Well, that's smart, though. At least you're prepped, you know?
Yeah, I my feeling was like, whatever I can do to learn and get more involved with music. And so eventually after high school, So I had 2 years of jazz ensemble and lessons, and learned some basic songs, but was mostly like, and I was really into blues. Blues was why I picked up the harmonica. I'd been listening to Muddy Waters.
Yeah, I was gonna say Little Walter.
Yeah. Well, it was a later album, I'm Ready, which had Jerry Portnoy and Big Walter on it. So I decided I wanted, this seems so boring, but you're asking.
No, this is fascinating, man. Honestly.
So I was messing around with guitar, and all my friends played guitar, and all these songs that I wrote, I didn't know how to tune the guitar. And so when a friend tuned my guitar, it changed some of the songs. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to find those anymore. I'm never going to have that problem again. I'm going to play an instrument that nobody plays. And so I was listening to Muddy Waters, and I was like, wow, nobody plays harmonica. I'm going to do blues, and I'm going to play blues and play harmonica. But then nobody that I knew played blues. So I was the only person I knew that was really into blues. And so I eventually went to community college and just like signed up for every class that I could. And I actually got put in concert ensemble because somehow they didn't know that I could sign up without auditioning. And I got put in concert ensemble, and I show up and I'm like, yeah, I play harmonica. I can play a little bit of guitar and piano. And they're like, what? No, go to the percussion section. And then I learned how to count bars. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 10, 2, 3, 4, 20. And I played bass drum. And I took some jazz theory classes and basic harmony. I just took any classes I could. And I was in a rock band in high school also for my last 2 years because I had long hair, not anymore. And they wanted me
I remember that version of Marcus.
They wanted me to be the singer because I had long hair. And I said, sure, but can I play harmonica? And they said, I guess so. And so we had a rock band that played the Whiskey A Go-Go, and I did stage drives. And
what? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was rock. It's like
you were getting your inner Pearl Jam out of you.
Oh yeah, we did some Pearl Jam covers and Guns N' Roses.
I remember, you know, you were one of the first people to show me War. And Lee Oscar. I remember Lee Oscar was a major influence. He's one of your favorite players. Tell me how like that came about and how his playing kind of affected you to kind of pursue a deeper side of funk and that Oakland sound.
Well, I guess that some people might not realize, but I'm white. And
wait, the interview's over. And I need to correct myself. I think War is from LA. I'm thinking of Tower of Power, which is from LA.
Right. And so my harmonica teacher said, go check out War and learn the song Low Rider. It's really good. And I didn't know anything about them. And I didn't really know much about R&B. But all of the bands of the 60s were imitating all the bands that I listened to were imitating, other than blues, they were all imitating black rhythm and blues and
totally
stuff like that. Except for Muddy Waters was not imitating.
Yeah. He was it. He was the real deal.
And so I didn't really know R&B that much. And in the 80s, I thought a lot of that was cheesy. And as I was starting to, as the grunge rock scene came about, it was kind of like, get rid of the 80s, all that stuff that I, you know, it was all cheesy and I wanted to leave that stuff behind. And to me, most R&B was cheesy. But when I heard Lee Oscar, I thought, wow, that doesn't even sound like harmonica. What is that? I spent two songs listening and I was like, there's no harmonica on this. And then I realized there was the whole time. He just plays each note so cleanly and his pitch doesn't, he's not playing with the pitch as much as a blues player would, so it didn't sound like a harmonica to me. And when I heard that and he also was doubling with a sax player or flute, and when I heard that made me think, oh well, harmonica doesn't just do blues. And for when I originally started harmonica, my goal was just to play blues, but that ensemble that I played in and the rock band really took me away from that. And when I heard Lee Oscar, I realized, oh, if he's playing with a sax player, then I should be doing anything a sax player is doing. And I started learning the chromatic harmonica, mm-hmm. Which is the one with the button. And so you don't bend on that one. And every note is precisely in tune and it plays in all 12 keys on one harmonica. And that was really frustrating. And my teacher was really good in certain ways, didn't have, you know, in some other ways, I wished he had given me other information, but in some ways he was very good. For instance, he never taught me how to play any scales on the chromatic harmonica. He said,
harmonic scales, none of that?
No, he said, well, he told me how to teach myself. So he was like, here's a major scale, C major. Okay. Now figure out, you know, that there's a half step between these ones. Now figure out every other scale. Then he said, here's a blues scale. Now figure out every other blues scale. And then he would just quiz me every week and say, well, which scale have you got now? And so then when I learned all those scales, then I was really able to jump in along to recordings and I was playing along to everything. And with War really opened up R&B and a lot of black music to me. And also Fishbone was, you know, a huge LA band. And they, you know, I think that they referenced a lot of black music. And so that really became, you know, it started with Muddy Waters, then War. And Lee Oscar, funny enough, is actually a Danish harmonica player. He's the only white guy in that group. But it started out with that. And then I started learning Miles Davis. And it all was like just about every other white musician was to learn black music, American black music.
Well, and then you kind of like veered into jazz, like being a jazz studies major, you were kind of thrown into the mix. You were doing Latin jazz stuff. You were doing combos and you were learning jazz heads on harmonica, which is not the easiest instrument to play some of those jazz heads.
No, but that was before the internet. And so there weren't, to find somebody else who did it wasn't as easy. And so, for instance, Lee Oscar was my example that you can, you know, I first heard, you know, the Muddy Waters harmonica players, then Charlie Musselwhite and Paul Butterfield. And then Lee Oscar sent me away from blues and thinking that you got to do what the other instruments can do. But then there was also Toots Thielemann and Stevie Wonder. And they were doing things. At first, I thought Stevie was cheesy.
And, really?
Oh, yeah, totally. And I thought all of his music was cheesy. And I thought, because I thought of Stevie Wonder as, I just called to say
hello. I was going to say that. Well, it was also the time period that you and I grew up, because that was our first exposure to Stevie Wonder. You know, it was like that song was huge when we were kids.
And I wanted to, and I did love that song, but I wanted to get rid of it.
Right.
Because I wanted to be a blues player and a grunge. You know, grunge to me was like so many versions of music where it's like, let's get back to the grit.
Right.
That's what blues is. You know, 1950s Muddy Waters was, you know, when I compare it to, like, for instance, Thelonious Monk at the same time, it's like Muddy Waters sounds like it was 100 years earlier.
Right. You know, I just watched Cadillac Records. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it shows like how he kind of was, you know, picking cotton in the fields. And then somebody came from the Library of Congress was like, you know, I want you to record some blues music. And he was like the reference for blues music. Like, what an incredible honor. And, you know, because of that, it does feel like it was this ancient style of music that, you know, predates itself. But it's like, it wasn't. It was just, you know, less than a century ago. It was like 60 years ago, you know. So it's crazy that blues was, it's not like this kind of, it's a really young art form. But yet it's so vast and it can change, you know, between instruments and styles. You have country blues, you've got jazz blues, you've got funk blues, but it seems to still have the same grit and angst that all those, you know, grunge and all those styles did.
And then you've got like more swing blues.
Right.
You got blues that's more trying to be jazz and slick. And in fact, Little Walter was a lot of that in a way compared to Muddy Waters. But so for me, that grunge thing was all about like getting greasy, and Stevie Wonder was too slick. But then I started to get it in my ear, and Toots Thielemann was too much over my head. And so then I started studying jazz, and you were asking like, how did I get into the curriculum and all that? My thought was, you know, all the friends that I went to high school with, one of them said like, don't study music, you'll lose your soul. And I was like, that's ridiculous. We've got soul. We love this. If you know more, you can do more with what you've got. And so my thought was go to music school, because I didn't really want to go to college.
Right. Right.
And if I'm going to go to college to make my parents happy, then I'd better do music, because I had the music bug, and I started teaching harmonica 2 years after I started playing. So I was already making a little bit of money teaching, and making a little bit of money playing. And then I went to community college, studied for 2 years, and I auditioned to Cal Arts, and they let me in.
Awesome.
And then the dean of the school said, no, we're not doing a harmonica major. And the head of the jazz program was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I really should have checked with the dean first before I told you you're in. And so then I thought, geez, what do I do? You know, and I called every school in New Orleans, because I was in love with New Orleans Rebirth Brass Band, Dr. John, who my stepdad used to tell me stories of hanging out with.
Wow.
And so I was hoping to move to New Orleans, but none of the schools would take harmonica. And so I tried USC, and my dad has some connections there. So I thought maybe I'd have a safe bet there. And I auditioned, and they were like, oh, okay, good. And
what did you audition with? Do you remember?
I played Well You Needin'.
Oh, wow. Great choice, dude.
And I think that's all they had me play, just one tune. And I played with Shelley Berg.
Oh, dude, he's a monster.
And they said to me, I think they said, well, you know, we're gonna let you in. You know, we don't want to turn away the next Toots Thielman. And I definitely was not the next Toots Thielman.
Well, you kind of are, though, man. You really kind of are. You know, I always think about you every time I see like a harmonica player playing in like a blues bar. And it's like, you know, a lot of them, I love your phrase. You call them boozer bluesers. And, you know, the funny thing is, it's harmonica is one of those instruments that like most people, like you see somebody playing a harmonica and it's like an okay harmonica player. And people are like, yeah, but like you've really studied the craft of playing harmonica. So like what I love about your playing and your respect for music is like, you actually have the discipline to kind of like learn the instrument more than a lot of those players did, that just people don't understand. So before we go on, let's have you play a track. I want you to play some music. What are you going to play for us?
I'll do an original.
All right.
I'll do an original that's kind of a gospel bluesy sound, more of what I started with.
All right, let's hear it. What's the name of it?
So Many Miles. I was a sinner, now I'm a preacher. Tried to live by example, yet I fall down. I got so many miles left to go. I got so many miles behind me. I got so many miles left to go. I got so many miles behind me, and so many miles left to go. Well, I tried to live my head up in the right direction. I tried to stand tall, make it on my own.
But I must confide now every man needs protection. I got so many miles to go. I got so many miles behind me. I got so many miles left to go. I got so many miles behind me. And so many miles left to go.
Yeah, man. Dude, that is incredible. And most people don't understand how difficult it is with your band. Not only are you coordinating, you know, like this with guitar and voice, but you're also playing unison lines with the harmonica and you're aligning with the guitar lines. Dude, that's incredible. I mean, like I'm watching you and I'm like, dude, he's doing three things at once. That ain't easy. And you're like comping and playing. There was one time where you started playing like a little bit of a like an interlude or like a solo on your harmonica while you're playing. Like, that's just crazy. You can do all those three things at once, man. You should be tap dancing and playing kick drum too, dude. Why not just take it up a notch?
Sometimes it goes really well, and then other times, like, nothing works.
Well, it's also like I love that you're playing slide, right? Dude, that's another part of guitar that's not easy, you know? It's like, it's crazy. I love that. When did you write that song?
Maybe like 2002, 2003.
What a great track, man. Seriously. It's so rootsy and old school. It's very much in that style, buddy.
I like to call it a gospel song for atheists.
That's perfect, dude.
I mean, atheists need it more than believers. They're like,
it's true.
I don't believe in anything. What's going on?
No, it's good.
Purpose.
No, but it's soulful, and what I love about it, it's like the best songs are simple to me. You know, when I write songs, I try to like always get back to that simple place because that's what makes it accessible. And it's like you just pull us in with everything you're doing with. The line is a hook, the lyrics are a hook, the melody's a hook. It's both familiar and unfamiliar, and I think that's what makes a song great. So kudos, man. Tremendous song. Really great writing. Awesome, dude. See, this isn't so scary. So let me ask you this. Okay, so
you pissed my pants.
So you finish school and you start. I think you and I actually, you played with NK Band. You played our very first gig. I remember that. Oh, yeah. And I still have that picture in my scrapbook. I have a picture of you and I at the Knitting Factory. And you played on Freedom, which I actually took the line. You and I were riding the line together. And we took it from War. I actually came up with a line. You're like, dude, I like that line. Where'd you get that from? I'm like, dude, it's Lee Oscar, Lowrider. Just reharmonized in a different way.
Right.
And you were like, yeah, man, you were one of the first people that I had written for another instrument and you liked it. And it gave me confidence. So I've always treasured that moment because, you know, it's been one of those experiences where it's like, you know, I have tremendous respect for you as a musician, Marcus. And when you earn that kind of respect from a musician like yourself, it gives you that tremendous confidence that, you know, you don't usually have in the beginning, you know? So let me ask you, I know Howard Levy was a big influence on you as a harmonica player as well.
Not that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wasn't that into him. There's a lot of harmonica players that I listen to and I think, wow, that is really amazing, but I'm not going to put them on. And so Lee Oscar is one of those people that I like the sound of what he does so much that even if I don't like the rest of the band, like it, some of his solo albums are so cheesy that I'll even listen to them and I'll just be listening to the harmonica. Howard Levy, and that was the thing with Toots Thielemann. Howard Levy and Toots Thielemann are doing stuff in a way that sometimes is a little more advanced and a little more notey than what I like. I like phrases to be a little more obvious. It's like we were talking about with the blues. To me, it's always a balancing act between something like very obvious and clear and tangible versus something that obscures it, just like impressionistic painting. I love abstract painting, but oftentimes I'm like, what's going on there? I gotta find something to hold on to, or I gotta be in the right mood. And so for me, the middle ground is like impressionistic. Rembrandt is just too clean.
Right.
And so although I love my classical music, but for me, it's always about how can you obscure the obvious? And so when you're doing blues and you're messing with the notes, or you're, instead of using a 7-note scale, you're using a 5-note scale.
Right.
Instead of playing every note in the chord, you're not playing the third of the chord, or you're playing the one chord is not resolved. It's a dominant chord instead of a major chord. Everything's about the simple versus the abstract or the complex. Right. And so for me, somebody like Howard Levy is over my head most of the time. Mm. And I have to be in the right mood to listen to him, and Toots Thielemann too. And when I'm in the right mood, and as my ears get better, I like those guys a lot more. But I tend to just keep coming back to
the blues guys. Yeah.
Blues guys or pop guys or anybody who makes some balance of the really obvious. You know, if it gets too virtuosic, it starts to lose me. And that was actually the problem in jazz school, is I eventually did not like my own playing, because I did study a lot and some of that stuff made sense and it was easy to learn some scales. But I started playing up a scale and that I knew worked on a chord, but I was like, I know I'm playing the right notes, but they do nothing for me. And so it's over the years, as I started learning traditional jazz, early jazz, that I started hearing the roots and the foundations of what was embellished and obscured later in jazz history. And that has helped my hearing. The more that I hear, you know, if you take a song like what I did just now, you can add in a ton of extra chords. And that song form that I did was basically Saints. It was right. The Saint Chords is When the Saints. But you can add in, you know, if I do that same song, you can go, I've got so many miles to go. I've got so many miles left to go. So many miles, so many miles. I've got so many miles left to go. And you just, I just put in a bunch of extra chords. And that's not, I mean, that's even early embellishments. That's not even like 1940s embellishments there. But the more that I hear what is like a simpler version of something, it's easier for me to hear the more complex.
And well, it's almost like there's a foothold that you can grab onto. That's what I like about the blues in general. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's a language that is based on only a few words, and the people that can make phrases out of those simple words are the ones that it speaks volumes, you know? So it's like that less is more thing that is blues music, you know?
You said to me once, and since we're recounting the history, I do owe you an apology. You said to me like, Michael Jackson is the best, the best producers, Quincy Jones. And I was like, no, I'm learning jazz right now. I'm learning jazz. Michael Jackson is nothing. That's just bubblegum. Quincy, whatever, man. He needed to make some money. And no, I was wrong.
It took you 20 years to tell me that? I'm glad I got this recorded so I can show you this 20 years from now.
I was wrong. Quincy really knew how to break things down. He knew how to make it as complex as he could. He wrote all those great arrangements for Basie and Sinatra, but, you know.
And Ray Charles. He did some for Ray Charles, too.
But, you know, you go to that Michael Jackson stuff, and you're like, wow, that was a period of some very skilled producers and musicians knowing how to simplify things. And all along the way, there have been people who do that, you know, like Stand By Me, the bass line and Stand By Me. You know what song that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Immediately.
And, yes.
You know, Jaco Pastorius could have played more. But yeah. But that, you know, that bass line is amazing. And I think there's always, that's what I'm saying, is there's always making it obvious. But by the end of the song, Benny King's voice is cracking and going, whenever you're in trouble, you know.
And it's pitching.
Pitch, and that's great.
And nobody can ever, whenever I hear somebody cover that song, nobody ever comes close to Benny King.
No, it's horrible. I've been trying to learn it. It's awful.
There's certain voices, you know. I learned Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke, and I learned all the vocal licks in that song. And actually, when I wrote the song for Ziggy, in the demo we sent him, I did all these Sam Cooke licks, and I was so bummed that he didn't put that on the record, like, you know, using his own stuff. But it's like, you know what? Sam Cooke made those licks his own. You know, it's like you can learn them all day long, but they're his, dude. You know, so it's really you're borrowing, and instead of like trying to reinvent them, you know, and that's how it is with great singers like that, like, you know, Benny King, Sam Cooke, you know, any of those old school guys. They're just, you hear their voice and it's like, you know, right away. Ray Charles is like that for me. As soon as I hear him sing, I'm like, oh my God, it just makes me just stand still, you know.
I mean, so, if you can do them, great.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, it's they came up with it. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the thing that is the ingenious part of it, that, you know, they may have been influenced by soul music or blues music, but they laid it down and made it their own, you know. Same with Etta James. Like, I've been listening to a lot of I'd Rather Go Blind and Sunday Kind of Love, and she was one of those singers too. I'm like, man, there just aren't any singers that can do that these days like that, you know. Like, so I totally get what you mean. It's like, sometimes it's those, I've kind of taken the same journey with music, where it's like I've come back to the blues as being one of the most important genres of music, if not the most important genre of music, because it's helped diversify into all these different forms that have become rock and roll, jazz, even reggae, you know, just like the you know, whole style of music is just evolved into so many different forms. One thing I've always loved about you, Marcus, is you are an eclectic soul. You are doing blues music in a lot of different genres of time periods. Mm-hmm. So you've done like a gypsy jazz thing. You've done like a 50s and 60s jazz thing. You and I have done some like 70s funk arrangements, you know, together. So tell me, is there any kind of style of music in the blues that you are most drawn to, or is it kind of changed day to day?
I'm definitely, my favorite period of blues is early 1950s. Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter. Those are my favorite guys. And the way it was recorded, Sun Records and Chess Records, they really were taking some chances, and some of it was like because they didn't know what they were doing and they didn't EQ things that well, but some of it was because they knew that if they pushed the sound in a certain way, it would have a special quality. And I love that stuff's my favorite. I love all of it, and I think there's something to be gained from all of it. And, you know, I think if something's not moving me, then I'm like, you know, I'll come back to it. But whoever bothered to pull that off probably was going for something. Like, even when I talk, you know, even if I'm talking negatively about virtuosity, I think that there's something, I think there's a purpose to it. And, you know, I think that it's you just get whatever you can, you grab the things that work for you at the time, get as much knowledge as you can, and hold on, and just hold on to what feels special. And so with virtuosity, I play in New York 6 nights a week with different bands, pickup bands in bars, playing gypsy jazz and blues, trad jazz, traditional jazz. And there are a lot of guitar players who play a lot of notes.
Right. Less is more.
And they're on every instrument. But when, you know, I find when you're in a band and you don't know anyone except for one person that you've played with once before, and you show up at a gig and people are calling songs that maybe you haven't heard before, and you're having to learn them on the spot, and the room is like all 20 something Tinder dates who make, you know, 4 times as much money as you do, and are not clapping after every song. I think that there's a part to a musician that says, you know, I've got to get something happening. Like, this situation is so challenging. It's so loud. It's so hard to get any validation. I need to do something that makes me feel like I'm actually here. And if that means like playing a lot of notes, it physically feels like you're awake. And I think that it engages a musician intellectually when they're having trouble finding something spiritual, emotional, or whatever it is, because it's really hard to be vulnerable and open 6 nights a week for no money when you're watching other people make more, like, you know, when you're watching other people on TV become more successful and at what you do, and other people being able to afford the drinks that you can't buy, that you only get one ticket for. I think that whatever people do to try and engage the music is a way in, and hopefully they can do it in a way that really satisfies them on a deep, lasting level. But maybe that night or that year or that 5 years, the virtuosity is what helps them stay the course. And at some point they run into their Muddy Waters, their Lee Oscar, their whoever it is that just unlocks something, their Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, whatever. And that they, 20 years later, say, "Oh, I was wrong."
Well, let's have you play. I want to have you play another song, man. What are you gonna play us next?
I'll do another original. This is another old blues form. And speaking of adding chords, this is based off of How Long Blues, which there are many versions of. So, Come On In My Kitchen, You Got to Move, those are all the same version of the song. And so I just figured, how many chords can I squeeze into that? And then I'll add a bridge, and I'll do it in an Otis Redding 12-8 groove, because the 1980s and the 1950s were like the only periods where 12-8 was really happening.
That's probably true.
So here's my Otis Redding version of How Long Blues. This is called So Long. You done me right. You done me wrong. But things look better, baby, now that you're gone. So long.
honey, so long. That ship pulled in, then it sailed right on. When the wind is blowing, baby, I got to be sailing on so long. Now, honey, so long. But I don't blame you. You do what you know. But it's time for me to go. I may forgive, but I don't forget. 'Cause what you give is exactly what you get. Now when that mind is pulling, I can't go wrong. There are bigger fish, babe, where I belong so long. Now, honey, so long.
So good. Real quick, why don't you tell everybody where people can find you online? Just list your sites, and then I want you to play one more song to play us out, man. So, Marcus, this has been such a pleasure, man. Seriously.
Likewise. Let's. Can we keep going another hour after this?
I'll have you on again. How about that?
Okay. So you can find my music. The name of my band is called The Milkman and Sons. I'm the milkman because... And the sons are in my band. I have my sons playing with me. Some of them are older than me, and some of them are younger than me. They all have different mothers, but they are all my sons. And even the female ones are like sons to me.
I'm sure they appreciate that. So it's milkmanandsons.com?
Yeah. And the milkmanandsons.com, and you can find the music on Spotify and every streaming service. And the music ranges from solo to acoustic trio to an electric band. So there's a couple different versions, and it's all self-produced, self-released.
And if somebody wants to take harmonica lessons, how can they reach you best?
They can call me and reach me anytime because I am now unemployed.
Hey, don't worry. You'll be snatched up sooner than later, and you're definitely going to be coming in to record some NK Band stuff soon.
Everybody's unemployed. So yeah, you can definitely find me on the internet. Just search for Marcus Milius.
Spell it out because people are dumb, man.
MarcusMilius. And you can find, I have a Marcus Milius website and the Milkman and Sons website, and you can contact me through either of those.
And your last song was a shout out to my bulldog Otis. Was that correct?
I didn't know you named Otis after Otis.
I did, man. Of course.
The big O.
That's right. So what are you going to play us out with?
That's a good question. I'll do something minor. This is called The Jack. Or no, yeah, I'll do The Jack. No, I take it back. I'm going to do, yeah, no, the last one was slow. I'll do this one. This is The Jack. Boom.
What a pleasure it was to interview you. I feel like I learned you all over again, man. New versions, new dimensions. I love you like a brother, man. Seriously, thanks for taking the time to do this. Your music is fantastic. I look forward to many more collaborations with you, and we're going to have you back on the show, man.
Do I get to interview you next time?
Only if you apologize one more time for that. For the Michael Jackson. No, it's great. It's great to see you. It's great to hear from you. And we look forward to many, many more albums from you. And yeah, keep us posted on what's happening with you musically, man.
Thanks, I will.
Dude, thank you again, Marcus.
All right,
signing off on behalf of Ronan, myself, and Eddie. We'll see you guys next week.